Today on Richard Ellis Talks.
The bigger your pile gets, the harder it is to let go of. If you are truly a steward of what God has given you, it is not about consuming it yourself. It is about processing it and saying, God, I will be a distributor of your blessing.
You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is unlike anyone else, where he shares the life-changing message of the gospel in a way that's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. We know that life is pretty challenging these days, but these talks will help you meet those challenges head-on with biblical truth, encouragement, and direction. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellis.com. So, let's jump right in with today's talk. Here is Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Cornucopia. And if you don't know what that is, you probably do and just don't realize it. In Greek mythology, a guy named Amalthea raised Zeus on the milk of a goat. In return, Zeus gave Amalthea the goat's horn. It had the power to give to the person in possession of it whatever he or she wished for. This gave rise to the legend of the cornucopia. The original depictions were of goat's horns filled with fruits and flowers. Deities, especially Fortuna, would be depicted with the horn of plenty. And it literally means, cornucopia in Latin, means horn of plenty. And usually around Thanksgiving, you see these wicker basket looking things, and they've got fruit and stuff coming out of them. Well, that's where that came from. Turn to Psalm chapter 23. A lot of you know this by heart. And I'm going to start with, we'll read this together. Then there's a little phrase in here that I'd like to kind of spin off of in regard to this horn of plenty or cornucopia category. The Psalm of David here, the 23rd Psalm, says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil." And then this phrase, "My cup runs over." I don't know that I've ever stopped and looked at this, but it ties in with where we're going today, and I'd like you to think about that. It goes on to say, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." And by the way, this is not a depressed psalmist. This is somebody who knows that God is his shepherd. He's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay, no matter what. And literally, he is so overwhelmed with the goodness of God, he says, "My cup runs over. I can't contain what's going on," and the word literally means saturation. You're so full that it can't take anymore, and if you keep pouring water in or keep soaking something, it's just going to overflow because there's no way to put more in it. So he says, "My cup runs over." Now I'd like you to jump over to Philippians chapter 4. New Testament, we're going to jump around just a little bit today. I'll jump to Philippians, then we'll go back left and move left to right just for simplicity's sake. Philippians chapter 4. And I'm going to read beginning in verse 10. This is Paul writing to the church of Philippi. And he says, "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need." And then he says something pretty extraordinary. "For I have learned in whatever state I am to be content." Now, usually when people read this passage, myself included, I think, well, he's talking about not having anything. And we're broke, and we can't pay our bills, and things are terrible, and I'm learning to be content in that situation. There's a flip side of this, where it is learning to be content when things are great. And really, our problem in America is not being poor. Most people in America, I mean, I know we have poor people in America, but in terms of world standards, it's horn of plenty. There is more than we can stand. And the problem is not having enough. It's that the more we get, the more we spend to get ahead and to increase our standard of living. If you just started, let's say you're just got married, if you're married and you're broke and you live in a little apartment, if you kept your standard of living, and I understand some people live this way as well, they have to. But if you keep your standard of living what it was when you had a little, you know, two-bedroom apartment and didn't spend any more than that for the rest of your life, there's no way you're going to be broke. But you see people that get more money, more house, more money, more stuff, more money, more, and you can have somebody that makes literally $1 million a year completely upside down. They can't pay their bills because they have maxed everything out based on what's coming in, and so they're broke, but yet they're rich. We have abundance in this country. And Paul somehow, in the midst of all this process, says, I have learned something. I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. In other words, without. I know how to abound. So he knew how to be broke without hardly just his basic necessities, but he also had learned how to be blessed and what to do in that situation. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. And then the phrase that gets jerked right out of the Bible all the time, it says, verse 13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now, you say, well, maybe that applies to life in general. I agree, but the context here is learning to be with or without, full, hungry, abound, abased, and whether we can do that. Now, on one hand, we say, well, if you're busted and you have to trust God, then you say, oh, Lord, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But you get on the other side of that when you've got everything. You know what? You're going to need him just as bad when you're blessed as you are when you've got nothing. Because we get in more trouble when things are going good. We don't do that well. We don't do abundance well. We get a little money. We get a new job. You have people prayer requests. Oh, I lost my job. Pray for me sometimes. They get their job. I'm out of here. I can do it now. Well, how'd you get that job? Well, I'm smart. I told this story another place this week, and it bears repeating. It kind of shocked my brother and I unbelievably. He called me the other night, just spur of the moment, said somebody had given him some great Maverick tickets, a lot of stuff going on, and he said, would you like to go, kind of a break? I said, I got permission. You can get outvoted pretty fast in my house, 4-1, 4 women, and somehow I got a pass. So, but I run my house. Anyhow, so they let me go. My brother and I go to this game, and it was nice just to sit there. We don't spend a lot of time together. We're sitting there at halftime. We said, let's go get something to drink, maybe just walk around. And I said, you know what? I saw somebody with ice cream, maybe a little bowl of ice cream. So we start walking around the lobby of the American Airlines Center. Couldn't find the ice cream. The place was shut down. We had to go all the way back around. Finally, we see a place. We go up. We get our ice cream. And I had kind of a wild print shirt on, and these two guys and a girl, about 20, 21 years old, walk up behind us. And I turned around, the guy spoke to me, said, man, I love that shirt. I said, well, make me an offer, I'll sell it to you. I got a t-shirt on under it, figured I could make a little money at the game. He said, no, it's too big for me. I said, well, you could grow into it. He said, I hope not. He was smaller than me. So when we started talking to him, I could tell either they'd been drinking or something just wasn't right. And as we were buying the ice cream and they're lying behind us, I hear this, effing God. He put the F word and God together. And I was like, whoa, where did that come from? Something, something, effing God. And I turned around and I didn't say anything abrupt. I just said, I don't think the F word and God really go together all that well. What do you think? Well, I don't care. He's never effing done anything for me. And, it was his verb, his noun, his adjective. It was everything. So we get to talking and I'm listening. He said, God never did anything for me. I said, well, how'd you wake up this morning? Woke up. I said, wow, you don't need God for anything then. Absolutely not. And he said, and what's some Jesus hanging on a cross for 30 seconds going to do for anybody? Just like that. My brother and I like, dude, please step away from the maniac, Please deploy your lightning rods at this time. And he was dead serious. And I said, well, at least you know something about him. And I thought, well, if nothing else, Lord, I'm going to throw the gospel in here. And I said, well, the whole Jesus thing, he died for you. I said, whether you get this or not or believe it, he died for you, was buried and raised from the dead. And that's what can change your life. Well, he never did any, effing thing for me. And it was just went on and on and on. And finally, my brother, he was pretty quiet. He turns around and he looks at the guy and he said, well, what do you think you would say to Jesus if you met him? And the guy takes both hands and sticks them in my brother's face. Double barrel, flip off Jesus. Both hands together, just like that. I couldn't breathe. You think, well, who would do that? We do it every day. Now, the thing I walked away, and what I respected, the little girl with him, by the way, I thought, wow, her mama must be real proud. She chose wisely these great young men. She looked up to me and she said, are you like a minister or something? I said, yeah. And I said, just remember this. Somebody stopped and talked to you and listened to you, and that God does love you and he cares about you. Now, what I loved about those guys is they weren't lukewarm. And Jesus said, I'd rather be hot or cold, but don't be lukewarm. It makes me want to spit. Now, you say, well, I don't have that attitude. The norm is when we're upside down in trouble, oh, God, help me, God, help me. And when everything goes great and he blesses us, we're out of here. You know what? It may be harder to trust God when you have blessing than when you don't. Because we get self-dependent. What has he done for me? And I don't need him. I'm smart. I can do it by myself. Let me read it again, verse 12 out of Philippians. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound everywhere and in all things. I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. An old guy named Erasmus, who lived back in the 14, 1500s, said this, great abundance of riches cannot be gathered and kept by any man without sin. That was his opinion. Now you say, well, can you be rich and not live a sinful life? I'm not saying it's not possible, but I think the more abundance you gather just for the sake of abundance, the trickier it gets. Go to Ecclesiastes chapter 5 in the Old Testament. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, and let's jump in here at verse 8. If there was anybody who knew something about abundance and blessing, it was Solomon. And when you get right down to it, it had pretty much messed his whole life up. The thing he asked for was wisdom, and then God gave him what he didn't ask for, which was riches and power and all this. But he didn't use the wisdom God gave him. He married, had like 1,000 women in his life. And that should just tell you right there, that's trouble. Forget the money. But he writes here in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 8, if you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter, for high official watches over high official, and higher officials are over them. Moreover, the profit of the land is for all. Even the king is served from the field. And then look at verse 10, 11. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. Have you noticed that? You say, well, I got more than I had before, but all of a sudden there's more people eating what I had or consuming what I had. They increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? At some point you go, well, it's coming and going, and maybe some satisfaction of saying, well, I guess that's mine, but where did it go? I used to be in the precious stone business and dealt with people who had all kind of houses and boats and junk. And I just every once in a while would marvel because they'd have a $5 million house in Vail, Colorado, and a beach house someplace and another house in Europe somewhere. And I think, you don't even know what you've got. You can't even be in all those places. You can only be in one place at one time. But they had all this stuff, and they were paying people to keep all this stuff, and they didn't have time to go be in these places because they were trying to make money to own all the stuff. It's a huge burden sometimes. Go to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, and this is Jesus having a conversation. There's a crowd listening to it, as we'll see here in verse 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, to Jesus, Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. But he said to him, Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? And he said to them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. Now, did you hear that? Your life is not about what you own, what you have. That's not the deal. But I'm telling you, you say, well, I know that. No, we don't know that because we spend our lives accumulating stuff. He says, take heed here then of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. Then he spoke a parable to them saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And I got to tell you what the word yielded plentifully means. It's the word euphoreo. And it sounds like euphoria, and it means bring forth plentifully, to be fertile, bring forth plentifully. It's just something happens. And if you've ever been in a situation where you're blessed and here comes the crop, a commission check, a deal closes, there really is a euphoria, some kind of euphoric feeling like, wow, This is amazing. I'm rich. Now, something, you say, well, is that a bad thing? I don't know. As long as you control it, this guy didn't do the right thing. Obviously, as you'll see, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no room to store my crops? Now, that's not a bad thought. If you got a big crop that comes in, okay, we don't want it to waste. Maybe we got to build some more barns and do something with it. But look where he goes. Since I have no room to store my crops. So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. That's okay. And there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, and this is where he got in trouble. And I don't do much talking to my soul, but this guy obviously is talking to his soul. He says, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. Sounds like a great plan. I got it made. I'll retire early. Barns are filled. I'm done. Now, what did he factored out? What did he not considered here? Look at verse 20. But God said to him, he didn't say soul. He said, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will these things be which you have provided? You've stockpiled all this stuff, and you're planning to eat, drink, and be merry and live this long life. You'll be dead tonight. And then where's it going to go? And then Jesus says in verse 21, so is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Now, ask yourself this question. Are you living a life of laying up treasure for yourself and saying, oh God, thank you that you've blessed me? Why do you think God is blessing you if he's blessing you? Is it to hoard it? Is it to hold on to it? Or is it to be a conduit through which the stuff goes? God blesses you and you say, okay, God, I got food, I got clothes, I got shelter, I got way more than most people on the planet. So what's all this other stuff about? And it's interesting, a guy named Michael de Montaigne, a French philosopher, says this, it is not necessity but abundance which produces avarice. It is not necessity but abundance which produces avarice. Now let me tell you where this gets tricky. God blesses you. And you get some money and you start holding on and go, wow, this is so cool. I've got cash. I got excess. And God says, okay, now let's move some of that. Oh, no, no, no. I'm praying about the right opportunity. And then God says, okay, I'm going to bless you some more. And I got my piles bigger. The bigger your pile gets, the harder it is to let go of. If you are truly a steward of what God has given you, it is not about consuming it yourself. It is about processing it and saying, God, I will be a distributor of your blessing. Now, I'll tell you straight up, this is not some, we're not building anything, buying anything. This is not necessarily a tithing sermon. But I will tell you, if you're not doing the right thing with God's money, you may not give it to God, but you won't keep it either. Now, I'm firing a shot over the bow. Somehow this little bitty church has survived all these years, and some people think, well, they don't need it. Let me tell you something. This is not about us needing your money. It is about you needing to give it. Because if you don't manage a little bit, you say, oh, well, one day if I had $1 million, I'd give 10% then. Let's run the numbers on that a minute. Somebody hands you $1 million and you pay your taxes, well, there's $500,000 gone, just like that. If you're going to tithe on the gross, there's $100,000. Now you got $400,000 left. What happened to your million? It's gone just like that. Oh, well, I don't believe in tithing on the gross. I can't afford that. The government took all of it. Surely God will understand. I'm encouraging you, where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be also. That's what the book says. I'm encouraging you to get this stuff out of your hot little hands and say, God, this is not my money. If I don't have breath, I can't make it anyway. Where do you want this to go? Because if you cannot handle blessing, he'll put you in another category where you're comfortable. Now, does God want everybody to be rich? I don't think so. That doesn't work out. But I think it is almost harder to be blessed and handle that than it is just to be busted and figure out what to do there. Let me read you another story out of the book. Luke chapter 21. Luke 21, this is Jesus again. And if you read the context here, he takes the disciples, it looks like, and they kind of go sit on the curb or whatever they're doing, sitting down and watching people go by. And they kind of had these maybe kind of big cornucopia looking thing, big funnel deals that made noise, these big brass things where people would come to the temple and give an offering. Well, you know, nowadays we drop cash and it's quiet. But back then, if somebody was trying to make a big scene, you know, you bring pennies or whatever and throw money in, it clangs and drops, and oh, wow, what a great person. You know, they gave a bunch of money. So they're watching all this go by. In verse 1 of chapter 21, and he looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites, little bitty coins. So he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. For all these, in other words, the rich, out of their abundance have put in offerings for God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had. Now, I'm not saying this is always the case, but it seems to be easier to give everything when you got nothing. And it seems to be very hard to give anything when you've got a lot. Go to John chapter 10. There's a little phrase I'm going to read you out of this that always perplexed me. And I used to almost hate this passage because I'd read it and it didn't make any sense. And Jesus here is talking to the crew and he says in verse 1, most assuredly I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. Then Jesus said to them again, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. Verse 10, the thief does not come except to steal, to kill, and to destroy. And then he says this extraordinary statement, I have come that they might have life, and that would be enough. But then he adds this phrase, and that they might have it more abundantly. Now, does that mean that God wants us to have stuff? I don't think that's what it's talking about. It can mean that, but you know what? At some point, the stuff really doesn't matter. The abundant life is not just saying, God, I've got this ticket to heaven. It's knowing him personally. It's having a relationship with him. It's when you get in a situation and a commission check comes in or whatever is going on in your life and you say, okay, God, here's what we've got. Where is this supposed to go? Not what do I want to do with it?
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellis.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the Talks page, along with all of Richard's audio and video messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link so you can connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, all of our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellis.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
God is not against us. He is for us. He wants you to have not just life. He doesn't want you just to exist. He wants you to have an abundant life. But you'll never have the abundant life he intended for you and for us unless you listen to him and trust him and obey him and let him do what he wants to do in his time. And he will take care of you. We get antsy. Well, God, you're not doing this fast enough. And I want more. And this isn't enough. And so-and-so's getting away with it. You know what most people are getting away with? Debt. That's what they're getting away with. Well, my coworker, she bought a brand new car. And you know what she got with that? A whole booklet full of payment coupons. And in about 2 weeks, it's going to smell. And some kid's going to spill Kool-Aid on the new seats. And it's shot. And now you got a payment book. Just be still and understand he is on your side, and he's got to find out if it's a disaster to bless us, he's not going to bless us monetarily. If you made $1,000 a month and you can't give $100, there's no way you're going to give $1,000 on $10,000, so he's not stupid, right? Well, I've only got $1,000. How am I going to give $100 away? Knock yourself out and see what happens. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. Some translations say, have it to the full. And the word used there
abundantly means over and above, more than is necessary, super added, superior, extraordinary, surpassing, uncommon. Are you living that kind of life?
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellis.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, it's the best way to stay up to date with all the audio and video talks with Richard, post on the prayer wall, how you can join the team, and even a place where you can ask any questions you have to get straight biblical answers. Check it out, richardellis.com. Finally, we're grateful when you help us with the cost to bring you this program. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website richardellis.com. That's 855-6-RICHARD or richardellis.com. Until next time, thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.